Are you looking for new pie flavors? How about strawberry margarita pie with a salted rim, or bubbling butterbeer, or chocolate-covered cherry? Our next guests have a new cookbook out that takes pie to a whole new level. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. On the phone with me from Atlanta are Chris Taylor and Paul Arguin. They are doctors by day and pie contest winners by weekend. Paul and Chris are self-taught bakers who have won more than 500 ribbons for their baking, including Best of Show in 2017's National Pie Championships. And lucky for us, they have put their amazing recipes in a new cookbook, and it's called The New Pie: Modern Techniques for the Classic American Dessert. Do you have an unusual flavored pie that you like to bake? Are you intimidated by pie crust? Well, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us today. Paul,
thank you,
Chris,
very much.
Hi. We got you both on?
Yes, we're both here. Hello.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Again, thank you for being with us. I absolutely fell in love with your cookbook. It's wonderful.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. Now, you guys are married now, but you have one of the most unique first date stories that I've ever heard. Why don't one of you tell the listeners about it?
Sure. This is Paul. Chris was still living in Pittsburgh at the time, and I was here in Atlanta, and I was introduced, or it was suggested that I needed to meet Chris by a friend of his. And so we started chatting over the phone, and over the course of, you know, several conversations, one of the things that came up is that we had both a fairly extensive cookbook collections. So I suggested, well, you know what, why don't, as part of our first date, why don't we bake something together, you in Pittsburgh, me here in Atlanta.
Over the phone.
Yeah. And so I threw it to Chris and said, Chris, go ahead and pick something. And I got to say, I was thinking, oh, he'll probably, you know, do brownies, a pound cake. He didn't do that.
Uh-huh.
He picked out of Rose Levy Barenbaum's The Cake Bible, something called the Scarlet Empress, which is an extremely elaborate confection where you make a jelly roll, slice it, line a mold, this sphere-shaped mold with mm-hmm. these slices of jelly roll, fill it with a Bavarian cream, and then you unmold it. So I said, okay, great. So we did. We spent several hours on the telephone, you know, whipping egg whites and putting the whole thing together, and that was our first date.
I love that. Yeah.
Just to finish that off, uh-huh. that date became our anniversary. And then 5 years later on that date was the date we got married.
Oh, special. I love that. I just love that. Well, you know, of all the things you can bake, why did pie become your specialty?
Oh, this is Chris. I think pie is just infinite in what you can do with it. You can really take, and I think that's true about a lot of desserts. I think you can really take any flavor and turn it into a pie, you know, if you have the right building blocks. You know, mm-hmm. we find inspiration in all kinds of places, and it is just so creatively satisfying to come up with an idea for a flavor and then just, you know, ruminate on it. You know, how can we turn this into a pie? And it's just a great way to get our creative juices flowing, because you can really do anything with it. And I think that's sort of what we tried to reflect in the book is, you know, the pie maybe isn't just what you've always known, but pie can really be anything.
Yeah, I think that's very, very true. And you've certainly gone outside the box on your different combinations. What was your, you know, you've won all of these contests. What inspired you to enter a pie contest of all things?
Well, we did our first one several years ago. After Chris moved to Atlanta, we were both here. And he was just sort of looking around for things to do one weekend, and he discovered this small town pie contest up in I think it was Dahlonega, Georgia. He said, "You know, this contest. Why don't we give it a whirl?" And we did. So they had two categories in this contest: sweet and savory. So Chris said, "I'll take sweet," and so I took savory. And we both developed a pie, went and entered it, and lo and behold, Chris won it. His pie won first place at this Dahlonega pie contest. So we really enjoyed that. We thought, let's keep trying. So we found some, you know, county fairs, you know, some small fairs around Georgia, entered these contests, worked our way up to the state fair, did very well there, and then finally on to the National Pie Championships.
That is just amazing. Now, the recipe that you won with, you've actually generously shared that with us. It's called Summer Strawberry Pie, and we will have a link on our website. That would be WPR.org/Larry, and you can find it near the program note, which I'll be putting up after the show. It's not quite there yet. And you can also search for cherry or for strawberry pie. But what? Tell us about the pie itself, because it's a really nice pie.
Yeah, so it's sort of, if you're familiar, if you've ever made a key lime pie, mm-hmm. you know, it's freshly squeezed citrus juice, sweet condensed milk, and some eggs. And so that's the basis of it, except instead of lime juice, we use lemon juice. And then we add some fresh strawberries that we puree. And so you put that into the mixture and bake it in the oven, and it sets like a nice custard. And then we finish it on top with a nice tart lemon curd. So it's really great, especially now when the strawberries are in season. It's a really fresh, you get the brightness of the lemon, and you get that sweet berry flavor from the strawberries. And you can actually even decorate the top of it with some additional freshly sliced strawberries. It's really very delicious, but actually quite simple to put together.
It is, and full disclosure, I'm in the middle of making it right now. I decided I was going to make that, you know, to share with my colleagues here, but I did a rookie mistake and did not read the recipe entirely, saying that, oh, you have to chill this in the refrigerator overnight. Yeah, I fell victim. I should know better, but I did. So it's halfway finished. I will put on the lemon curd tonight when I get home and bring it in tomorrow. But, you know, what are some other tips for being successful baking pie besides read the recipe through?
Well, I think probably one of the most important things to do, and something we advocate in the book, is to weigh your ingredients. We know there's a lot of folks, you know, bakers here in the U.S. that have been very reluctant to purchase or use a digital scale. But I have to tell you, it makes such a difference in the end product. So rather than, let's say, scooping out a cup of flour, if you actually measure that flour by weight, you're going to get a reliably repeatable result every time. And I think that's probably the most important secret to our pie crust. Is why does our pie crust work so well every time? Is because we give you precise measurements. So if you put in that weight of flour and that weight of water, you don't have to worry about, you know, all of those other vagaries about, you know, maybe adding a little bit more, couple drops of water if it doesn't look right. We've taken the guesswork out of it for you.
And you've also given us the food processor to use if we'd like to. That's helpful.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we give you two sets of methods on how to make the pie crust. You can do it by hand with a little pastry knife, or you could use a food processor. And that, I have to say, if you're making a single crust, maybe just, and you don't want to take out the food processor, sure, go ahead, do it by hand. We often find if you're going to do, you know, a bunch of crusts, and we'll do that because we make our crust in advance, save them in the freezer until we're ready to make a pie. So if you're doing a whole bunch at once, using the food processor can really save your arm muscles.
Yes, it just works better, and you don't touch it as much, so you're not working it as much. And I have to say that your crust recipe that I followed for that was very simple, and it came out perfectly. Wasn't hard to use, wasn't hard to work with. So kudos, guys. Let's go to Joe. He's calling in from Oshkosh, and he has a question for you. Hi, Joe.
Hey, good morning. Say, nice show this morning.
Thank you.
My wife has often used canola oil in making crust and was always happy with it. But recently she heard of a study that says there's some linkage with canola oil and memory loss in mice when they did some experiments. And I'm wondering if you guys have heard anything about that, if there's any concern with canola oil, if it's the rapeseed or something, and if you're still using it. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Joe. Well, guys, you are doctors in real life. Have you heard anything like this?
Well, I guess I'll approach it from wearing my baker's hat rather than my doctor's hat.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, and so in general, canola oil is going to be liquid at room temperature. And so that's really not the style of fat that you want to use in a pie crust anyway. You'll notice that the fats that we recommend in the book, our base pie crust, uses butter and shortening. And then we also give a variation if you wanted to use leaf lard instead of shortening. But canola oil itself would not give you the, I guess, doesn't have the properties necessary to get you a crisp crust or flaky layers.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I've used oil crust and it is not as flaky and it is kind of greasy almost feeling. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, Joe, maybe you need to get to, maybe you need to get this book and you can try some of these other crusts out and show your wife, right?
Yeah, maybe some canola or coconut oil too.
Yeah, well, coconut oil is pretty liquidy. I mean, it's pretty soft, isn't it, guys?
Well, again, one of the things that we mention in the book is about substituting things. We've got a little section in the book on, we call it the dreaded substitutions. So every recipe in our book has been extensively tested by us as well as by independent recipe testers. And so we know that they work. We encourage experimentation and substituting things, but we do caution it's not always going to work. And so try if you say, "Well, I'm going to do a direct substitution of the butter for coconut oil," that may not work. I'm confident that there is a variation that can be made with coconut oil. But it may not be a one-to-one substitution.
Right. And you do have to experiment and have to, break some eggs to get your recipes
exactly
right. Yeah. So where do you guys get your inspirations for flavor combinations? Because they are very unique.
We sort of get them from all over the place. And we get this question a lot just because some of the flavors are novel. But if you have the book, you'll notice, the flavors we say are new to the world of pie, but not necessarily new to the world. So one of the places we find inspiration is from other desserts. So like mint chocolate chip ice cream, we have a mint chocolate chip pie, Thai iced tea, the strawberry margarita that you had mentioned. We find inspiration from other desserts. We'll find it, sometimes in the checkout aisle, as you're standing too long, gazing at the candy bar label,
right,
seeing what's new. A new cocktail menu.
Mm-hmm.
If you can see, what they're making for drinks when you're out at a restaurant, really inspiration is sort of all around you. And because we have pie on our mind a lot, we'll notice things when we're out and about going, "Oh, I think that could be a good pie. How could we do that?"
So then what is the process of going from a great idea to a great pie?
Well, I guess, depending on what it is you're trying, for example, if let's say we're just in the grocery store and we see a novel fruit that we've never either seen before or never tried to work with, I guess I would start by looking at the properties of that fruit. How wet is that fruit? I'll look it up if I need to find out if it's really something unusual that I don't know. What do we know about how much pectin is in that fruit? I'll try cooking it on the stovetop, and I'll start getting a sense of what it does. Then I'll start trying to think about flavors to pair it with. If this is a really sour fruit, I might start going down one path. If it's something really sweet and it reminds me of a raspberry, I might start going along that path.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, it's really an iterative process where sometimes you land on something right away and go, "I know exactly what I want to do with this." And other times it may take several tries to find out where it's supposed to go.
And where do all the failed attempts go?
Well, I guess it depends on how bad it is.
How bad it is.
If there's a dreadful, miserable failure, that can't be shared.
Yeah.
But for the most part, even things that are that we know that we want to improve or tweak, we often bring them into work and share them with our friends.
Well, and I'm sure you have lots of friends because of that, right?
Yes.
So we're talking about pie with Chris Taylor and Paul Arguin. And their new book is called The New Pie, Modern Techniques for the Classic American Dessert. So what is the best pie you've ever eaten? We'd like to share that, you to share that with us. So give us a call. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. We're going to take a short break for the news, but we'll be back to talk to Chris and Paul more about some of their recipes. And if you've got a question about about making pie, or, you know, maybe you've had some disasters you'd like to share, well, just let us know. I'm sure these guys can help you out. Again, our number, 1-800-642-1234. We'll be back right after this look at the news from Wisconsin Public Radio. Are you ready to expand your pie repertoire? Well, do we have a cookbook for you? Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, in for Larry Mueller today, and we've been talking with two very innovative bakers, Paul Arguin and Chris Taylor. In real life, they're doctors, but in their spare time, they take pie baking to an entire different level. They have won more than 500 ribbons for their baking, including Best of Show in the 2017 National Pie Championships. Their book is called The New Pie, Modern Techniques for the Classic American Dessert. Do you have a story related to pie baking? Or maybe you just have questions about winning a pie baking contest? Join in the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Well, Paul and Chris, we do have a number of people that have called, so let's go right to the phones. Clyde in Bad River, what would you like to talk to us about?
Well, thank you for putting me on. My comments are a little bit more challenging than the average bear, but here goes. We'll see how it works.
Okay.
My father was a master chef and a baker extraordinaire, and he's been passed away for a long time. And I grew up in the business. I started working for him when I was actually 6 years old, but I worked in the restaurant when I started at 11 years old. And I want to challenge these gentlemen to see what they say for pie crust recipe. And I will bet you money that I can take three ingredients and match anybody's pie crust in the United States of America.
Okay. Are you going to share that with us, Clyde?
Well, I want to hear what they say first, because I'm not going to tip my hand until they tell me how they do it.
So you want the
ingredients and the process.
Okay. Well, guys, are you going to take that challenge from Clyde?
Absolutely.
Okay, go for it.
Yeah, so for our crust, we use mostly butter, but we also use a little bit of shortening. The butter gives great flavor. The shortening provides some flakiness. It also provides, for a crisper crust, I find that all butter crust doesn't get quite as crispy. So we have the flour, we have the fat, and of course we have the water, which would be the three main ingredients for most pie crust. If you just have those three ingredients, a flour, a fat, and water, that'll make a perfectly acceptable pie crust. We do add a little bit of salt for flavor. We add a small amount of sugar for a little bit of sweetness, and that also helps to contribute to browning. And then we also add a little bit of vinegar and baking powder, which is unusual for a lot of pie crusts. This is actually something we've seen only in a few cookbooks, including Rose Living Barenbaum's Pie and Pastry Bible. And we find that the baking powder adds a little bit of puff, because that's the form of leavening like you'd use in a cake or a cookie. And that gives a little bit of puff, and I think it enhances the flakiness of the pie crust. So I think like all pie recipes, we have the three basic ingredients, the flour, the fat, and the water. But then we expand upon that to sort of put our own spin on it for something that we really believe is a really great pie crust.
Okay. Clyde, what do you think?
And actually, Clyde, before you jump in, this is Paul. I just wanted
Paul.
To throw in a little anecdote. So one of the things that I think it's important to think about with pie crust is everyone has different memories of pie. Often this is how my grandma baked pie. I can tell you there was one time I brought in a pie crust to work. I was trying something new and it didn't work at all. I thought it was an awful pie crust. It was sort of thick and chewy, but the filling was good enough. I figured, it's good enough. I can share with folks, and you know, I'm embarrassed about this pie crust. Someone came into my office and said, "Oh my God, finally, you made the perfect pie crust today, just like my grandmother made." You know, it was that thick and chewy, and I was thinking, oh my gosh. And it really is. There's so much memory associated with pie crust that oftentimes people have different standards in their head of what they think is the perfect. So what we strive for is a tender, flaky, crispy crust that has some really good flavor, I think. So, Clyde, it's all you now.
Okay, Clyde. You got disconnected, but I think you're back on with us. Are you there, Clyde?
Are you there?
Yes, we've got you now. So what do you think about Paul and Chris's recipe?
Well, I got disconnected with my cell phone. They have a mind of their own. I heard what he said about the three basic ingredients, and he's right.
Uh-huh.
You know, all you need is moisture, you need water, you need flour, and you need a shortening of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
But the process, I'm going to ask him real quickly, when they mix up their pie dough, what do they do after they measure out the ingredients? What do they do with the ingredients quickly?
Sure. So we give two sets of methods in the book, either by hand or using a food processor. For the food processor, which is probably the most common one that we use here when we're making crust, the dry ingredients go in first. We add the shortening, whiz that around to get that nice and incorporated. Next comes the butter, and you do it just enough so that there's still reasonable-sized chunks of butter left. Then goes in the water and vinegar mixture.
Okay. Well, I think we'll probably go on to a few new callers, but I have got to say, guys, that was probably the easiest pie crust I've ever made. And I've been making pies for a really long time. So it was super simple. And I haven't had a chance to eat it yet, but it looks really good. So, you know, we're talking about crust, and you've got other recipes for crusts in your book, too. Why don't you tell us a couple of those variations?
Sure. We have, in addition to our standard, you know, pie crust that we just described, we also have a cocoa pastry crust that we're particularly proud of. So it's a flaky pie crust, but we use some Dutch processed cocoa powder.
Mm-hmm.
So it bakes up nice and chocolatey brown, still nice and flaky and tender, but has a great chocolate flavor. And then we have a variety of press-in crusts. So we have graham cracker crust. We have a graham cracker crust with nuts. You could use pecans or walnuts. We also have a cereal-based crust. So we have one that's made with alphabet cereal.
Very interesting.
And we also have one that's gluten-free with Honey Nut Cheerios.
Wasn't there one in there with, like, Cheetos or something? Or am I...
No, you're right. You're right. It's the standard pastry crust, and then we crunch up a bunch of Cheetos into dust and sprinkle that all over the outside of the crust, roll it all over so that it's a Cheetos-embedded pastry crust.
I just love that. I just love that. Well, and talking about special crust, let's go to Jennifer in Madison. She's got a pie with a special crust. Jennifer?
Hi. My most memorable pie is something I adapted decades ago from Bon Appetit. It was a cran apple pie where it's primarily primarily apples, but a little bit of cranberry and walnut. And then in the crust, you include lemon zest and a little bit of fresh grated nutmeg. Mm. And that just really adds great flavor to the whole pie.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
I did win a contest with that
Oh,
one.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, I believe it. That sounds like a wonderful flavor combination.
Yeah, they're writing it down right now, Jennifer. Okay, let's go on to Dale in Hayward. Hi, Dale. Dale, you there?
Yes, I am. Uh-huh. Hello. My most memorable pie, my wife had an older friend that used to make pies. She made the best apple pie, and she used rendered lard in the crust.
Mm-hmm.
And the crust, I'm not a big crust person. And with her pie, I ate all the crust, too, because it was just so good. And I don't know if you can even get rendered lard anymore.
Well, guys, what's the difference between leaf lard and rendered lard? Is it the same thing?
Yeah, so leaf lard is a form of rendered lard. And leaf lard is particularly prized for its use in pie crust. It's fat from around the pig's kidneys. And so it has a very clean flavor when it's rendered properly.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, our crust uses butter and shortening, but we have a note that if you don't want to use shortening, you could substitute it with an equal amount of leaf lard. Now, leaf lard can be hard to find. Usually if you have someone near you who does some pork processing, it's probably easier to find. We find that if you just get the lard in the grocery store, which is not leaf lard, it doesn't have a great flavor to it. Sometimes it can be very, we say, piggy tasting. It can have a sort of a bit of a meaty flavor that isn't always great for something like a sweet pie.
Right.
So if you can find leaf lard, and it should look pure white. It's rendered properly. It should be almost pure white in color, and that works really great. in a pie crust. Very clean flavor and really does contribute a great amount of flakiness.
Okay. And Dale, up in Hayward, you might not have as much access than maybe one of the cities around. I know that you can get leaf lard, thanks to all those cooking shows that we all are addicted to. Now, guys, the subtitle of your book is Modern Techniques for Classic American Dessert. Talk about some of those techniques that you use, because I'm sure some people listening have they've never heard of anybody using them before.
Sure. So one of the ones, again, that we're quite excited about is the use of sous vide cooking for some of our fruit pie fillings. If you're unfamiliar with sous vide, again, you might have seen that on some of the cooking shows. This is where you'll put your ingredients into a plastic bag and vacuum seal it, place the ingredients into a water bath that's kept at a certain temperature by a device called an immersion circulator. So this style of cooking, I think, first became popular in high-end fancy restaurants, and now they're making these devices. You can buy them by an immersion circulator in Target. I've seen them at Walmart. I think this past Christmas they were quite popular. So you can use your old food saver process. You can even just use Ziploc bags with a little bit of care. But what's really cool about this method of cooking is it allows you to cook whatever it is, meat, eggs, or in this case, pie fillings, to the exact temperature that it needs to be. So I'll give an example. Let's say you were cooking something on the stove. Let's say you were going to cook some apples. And you've got a big pot full of apples, and you're stirring them with a rubber spatula. The ones that are on the bottom are going to get hotter than the ones at the top. And you have to be very careful to try and move all those apple pieces around to get them cooked down exactly where you want it to be. And it actually doesn't take a whole lot of extra heat for some of the apples to start turning into mush, or and then you'll have a mixture of some apples that are undercooked, overcooked. Using the sous vide technique takes all that away. If you vacuum seal the fruit in that bag, put it in the water bath at the temperature, all of the fruit will cook to the point, and I've set the temperature at where the pectin in the fruit starts to break out of the cell walls, form those cross linkages to gel, and so then when you place it into your pie filling, you're going to get perfectly cooked fruit. And why that's nice in an apple pie is, like the one that's on the cover of the book, you can measure the amount of liquid that those apples put out and make sure that you've added the right amount of thickener to match that amount of liquid. Because I know if sometimes you've had, let's say, an apple pie that was really loose and runny, or they added too much cornstarch and it was thick and pasty, you can avoid all that by again, using this technique to thicken the amount of liquid exactly in case you had some particularly juicy or particularly dry apples this time. So that's probably the most exciting modern technique that we've brought into pies.
Very unusual. I'm sure everybody's scratching their head saying, what? But it works pretty well for you guys, huh?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I've won several national blue ribbons using that technique to make pies. Mm-hmm. And in fact, for one of the pies in the book, it's a lemon pie, being that the temperature that you'd set your immersion circulator at is almost close to the boiling point, I give some steps that you can actually, without getting any fancy new equipment, you can still do that on the stovetop by just having some barely simmering water. And again, cooking your lemons in that plastic bag.
Okay. And some of the other innovative techniques that you use have to do with the decorating of the pie. I mean, from different colors that you're spray painting on there to, you talk about some of the ones that you use.
Yeah. So, I come from, one of my other hobbies, I like doing all kinds of baking, but I've also taken some classes in cake decorating, and I'm also a cookie decorator, which is a hobby that I've been doing for about a decade now. And so one of the tools I use for cookie decorating is a small airbrush. You fill it up with edible liquid food color, and you can spray paint, essentially, on a decorated cookie. And so I took that mini airbrush technique to pie crust because, I like the idea of a colored pie crust. And we see that a lot, you know, if you, you know, there's been features in some newspapers and online social media of colored pie crust. But to me, you know, when I bake a pie crust, I want to have a plain pie crust because I want to know, you know, that my crust is done. I like a golden brown crust, and it's hard if your crust is colored, because if it browns and it was a green crust, it's going to be green, but it's going to be a little brown too.
Very
it's not
true.
That sometimes.
Yeah.
And sometimes like some colors like purple, they'll fade in the oven under heat. And so you can actually use, you know, an airbrush to color the crust of your pie after it's baked and cooled. And you don't even have to have a machine for that. They sell edible spray color at most craft stores now. You can buy just a single color can and spray, and that can you can probably use for up to four pies, depending on how heavily you color it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also, another fun technique we have a pie in the book called Thai iced tea. If you're familiar with that drink from Thai restaurants, it's an orange tea, and it's they stir in sweetened condensed milk, and it's almost like a dessert. And so we have that pie flavor, and then to top it, we topped it with whipped cream cubes, which, you know, I thought was really fun.
Yeah.
What it is, it's actually not that hard, is you make whipped cream and you put it in a loaf pan, freeze it, and then pull it out of the loaf pan because you've lined the loaf pan with parchment or wax paper,
uh-huh.
and then cut the whipped cream into cubes and place them on the pie, and then you put the pie back in the refrigerator. And if you've made the whipped cream properly, after the ice cubes thaw to the refrigerator temperature, they'll hold their shape. And so you have these great, fun cubes that almost look like marshmallow,
uh-huh.
but they're soft and creamy, like, you know, the delicious whipped cream that they are.
Yeah. Yeah, such great. And you've got some different kinds of stencils and things like that you use too, right?
We use some fondant tools, the fondant that you'll put on, you'll see on a lot of decorated cakes.
Mm-hmm.
We'll use the fondant impression mats to press a design into some crusts. And when you brush an egg wash into those indentations in the crust, again, as that egg wash browns in the oven, the pattern will emerge on top of the crust. And I think you'll see a couple photos in the book where, of some of these decorated pie tops that are absolutely gorgeous. You can have a little floral pattern, or the we have one of the maple blueberry pie uses wood grain.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So it looks like little planks of maple wood,
yes.
on top of the maple blueberry pie.
Oh, yeah. And you do it. It's a lattice, but it's a really wide lattice. So it's just beautiful. Just breathtaking. We do have another caller. We've got Deborah from Brown Deer who wants to suggest a pie to us. Hi, Deborah.
Hello. My favorite pie is key lime pie, and I had one baked for me by Annie when I was an Annie in Dallas. And Annie was the cook, and it was just amazing. But I used to work at an apple orchard, Salinger's Apple Orchard in Westchester County, New York. And their pies were famous, and people would come from Long Island, which is 100 miles away, to see and smell the aroma of the pies. And then, but my favorite apple pie is made by the Elegant Farmer in Wisconsin. It's apple pie baked in a brown paper bag.
Okay. Thank you, Deborah, for sharing that with us. I know the Elegant Farmer apple pie is pretty well known, at least in this part of the state. Have you guys ever heard about baking a pie in a brown paper bag?
We have heard, actually, through there were a couple pie Facebook interest groups.
Ah.
And there was actually a discussion about 3 or 4 months ago. People were trying to, you know, is the recipe out there? Is this the real recipe? Has anyone tried it? Does it work? And so I think there have been some people that have tried it. We haven't had a chance to try it yet, but it sounds very interesting because scientifically I'd love to know what the brown paper bag does. So it's really something that I'd like to give it try.
Well, let us know, because like I said, that's pretty famous in these parts. You know, I was watching the Great British Baking Show last night. It just happened to be that one of their pie shows. And one of the challenges was to make an American style pie. And everyone was complaining that our pies are way too sweet. Now, what are your thoughts on that?
Gosh, I don't know. It's funny. Whenever we bring in pies to share, a common comment that we'll get from someone. Someone will usually pull me off to the side and say in confidence, you know, one of the things I really like about your pies, I think I'm different than most people. I don't like really sweet pies, and
right.
Your pies aren't too sweet. They're perfectly balanced. And I think everyone thinks they have that perfect palate. It's kind of funny.
Yes.
I've got to. Thank you so much is what I say now. But yeah, no, I do think that's an important thing is to know like what are the base ingredients that you're using? Sugar certainly is an important component of pies, but you don't want to go overboard with it.
Right.
I know if you're using something incredibly sour, like cranberries, for example, you are going to end up using a little bit more sugar than you'd think, but you really need to balance those two flavors, that sweet, sour, bitter. You can get that complete balance of flavors so that you can get a delicious pie.
And I found that commercial bakeries and, you know, if you decide to open that can of filling, it's going to be overly sweet. Rather, homemade tends to be much better.
Absolutely. You're in charge of the sweetness at that point, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you guys have a favorite pie recipe? Are they all like your children?
Exactly, they are.
Yeah, very true.
Uh-huh. Well, what are you working on right now?
We always maintain a long list of pie things that we want to try. So I'd say in the past couple weeks, pie testing is a little bit on hold as we're promoting this fabulous new book we have.
Sure, exactly.
But as summer fruits start coming into season, we'll be out there in the markets sort of getting bushels of whatever we can get our hands on. Probably I would think blueberries are going to be coming up soon. That's probably what I'll be working with next.
Okay. All right. Well, guys, I want to thank you so much for sharing some of your book with us. I want to encourage everybody to go out and buy it. If you like pie, if you have if you make it, or if you have a friend who makes it, give it as a gift. Good luck with this, by the way. How is the book doing?
I think it's doing pretty well.
Okay.
It's been very exciting. We've been going around to a couple different cities promoting the book. Uh-huh. And it's great meeting people who are making our pies. They're sharing their pictures on Instagram
sure.
and social media. We love seeing it.
Well, thank you, Paul and Chris. Again, the name of their book, The New Pie, Modern Techniques for the Classic American Dessert. Hope you can join us tomorrow when we'll be talking about wetlands and urban gardening. That's tomorrow starting at 10. Until then, I'm Jill Nadeau, filling in for Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for listening to the Ideas Network.